Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
First, we'll talk with FFRF attorney Andrew Seidel about the new bill to reform and expand the Supreme Court.
Then we'll meet Mexican-American actor and atheist activist Indra Zuno.
And discuss her new book, Freedom Dues, a novel.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. A lack of new treatments for common illnesses has left people exposed to the world's most dangerous bacteria, the UN Health Agency said on Thursday. The alert from the World Health Organization, WHO, is delivered in a report showing that none of the 43 antibiotics in development sufficiently addresses the growing threat posed by 13 priority drug-resistant bacteria. This persistent failure to develop and distribute effective new antibiotics threatens our ability to successfully treat bacterial infections, said Dr. Hanan Balki, WHO Assistant Director General on Antimicrobial Resistance. Those most at risk are young children and those living in poverty. According to WHO, 3 in 10 newborns who develop blood infections die because the antibiotics that are used to treat sepsis are no longer effective. Bacterial pneumonia, another preventable illness which has developed resistance to currently available drugs, is also a major cause of childhood mortality among under-fives. More than 4.5 million new cases of COVID-19 were recorded in the last 7 days, the seventh week in a row of rising infections. Announcing the development in a regular update, the World Health Organization, WHO, said that the uptick had been highest in Southeast Asia, particularly India and the Eastern Mediterranean. Coronavirus deaths also rose for the fourth consecutive week, increasing by 7% compared to the previous week, with more than 76,000 victims reported globally. Only Africa and the Americas did not see an increase in the number of deaths. The largest increase was 189% in the Western Pacific, largely driven by the Philippines, followed by a 47% spike in Southeast Asia. To Iraq now, and good news from the city of Mosul, where the winning design to rebuild Al-Nuri Mosque has been chosen from more than 120 entries from across the world. It's a landmark moment in helping the war-torn city's reconciliation and social cohesion after years of control by ISIL extremists and the destruction of the iconic landmark when they were driven out in 2017, said UN agency UNESCO. The Egyptian team that won the competition scooped the award for their imaginative reconstruction of Al-Nuri's prayer hall and complex, and for the way it blends into its surroundings through open public spaces. While the hall will look as it did before the mosque was destroyed, it will reopen with better natural lighting and more space for women and visitors. There will be enclosed gardens too, inspired by the historic houses and gardens that were located around the prayer hall prior to its remodeling in 1944, UNESCO said. It maintained that historical sites were key to reviving the spirit of Mosul and of Iraq. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Imagine that. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'd like to start off by saying usually today is a taxing day, but tax day has been deferred to May 17th.
Oh, so we have a month breather. And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and co-hosts of this show. And this is the April 15th, 2021 edition. We are hosting from our Safe at Home studio in Madison, Wisconsin, which is the city of the national headquarters of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And our engineer and producer, again, is the very capable Buzz Kemper. He's over in his studio in, down by the Wisconsin Capitol called Audio for the Arts.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which has over 35,000 members. If you are a member, thank you. If you're not, we would love to send you a sample of our newspaper, a brochure about our 40-plus years of activism as a state church watchdog, and now the nation's largest association of atheists and agnostics. And you can just go to ffrf.org and click on the Ask for Info link on our homepage, or you can go to the Donate to join us. And we will speak with a stronger voice that way.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with the Mexican-American actor and author and atheist, Indra Zuno, about her fascinating life, but also about her brand new book. It's called Freedom Dues, a Novel.
And before that, in a few minutes, FFRF's Director of Strategic Response, Andrew Seidel, who is an attorney, will tell us about the exciting, momentous introduction today of a bill in Congress to expand the U.S. Supreme Court, the seats on the U.S. Supreme Court, and why FFRF supports that expansion.
Tomorrow is the anniversary of the birthday of the actor, film director, composer, and conductor, Charlie Chaplin. He was born April 16, 1889. Known as the Little Tramp, Chaplin starred, produced, directed, wrote, scored, and edited many movies. He admired, and he was admired by, the philosopher Bertrand Russell. Chaplin agreed with the writings of the great freethinker Robert Ingersoll, who, he wrote, confirmed my own belief that the horrific cruelty of the Old Testament was degrading to the human spirit. Listen for some of Chaplin's musical compositions today, including Dancing on the Yacht, The Clown's Apprentice, and The Real, that's R-E-E-L, The Real Chaplin.
And so for Free Thought Matters this week, Dan, I think you made a boo-boo last week.
Last week I did make a mistake. I announced that our guest for our TV show, Free Thought Matters, last Sunday, April 11th, was Jessica Ahlquist. Jessica is our guest for this Sunday, April 18th. Last Sunday was the distinguished journalist and author, Susan Jacoby.
Since we heard a clip from Jessica's interview last week, out of order, let's listen to a little of Susan Jacoby. She's talking about Joe Biden's Catholicism.
People say, oh, how can you stand Joe Biden? He's a devout Catholic. Well, probably if Joe Biden and I were to sit down and have a theology discussion, we wouldn't agree. But he is the kind of post-Vatican II Catholic who, while he believes in certain things, no doubt that I don't believe in them, he does not write them into public policy. In other words, you can be a Catholic, as numerous Pew polls show that the majority of lay Catholics in the United States and Europe support women's reproductive rights.
That's the journalist and author Susan Jacoby, and you can watch that entire Free Thought Matters interview with Susan on FFRF's Free Thought Matters YouTube channel.
And you can also already today catch Jessica Ahlquist's Free Thought Matters interview, but it's also being broadcast this Sunday. We want to reach the unmasked masses in Chicago, Denver, Houston, L.A., Madison, Minneapolis, New York, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco. So for stations and times, you can check ffrf.org/news. Look for the Free Thought Matters dropdown.
FFRF's Ask an Atheist show this week, which airs on Facebook Live most Wednesdays at noon central, was about our recent major court victory in Alabama, ending a religious test to register to vote.
And you can watch the FFRF attorneys who argue that case, plus our principal plaintiff, Professor Randall Cragen, discuss that significant victory on YouTube by searching for FFRF Ask an Atheist. And enough of those commercials. Now on to the news.
So our attorneys have been busy, as always. FFRF is complaining again about the posting of Bible verses at the courthouse in Henderson County, Tennessee. One verse says, "Justice, then shalt thou understand judgment," from Proverbs 2:9. Another reads, "Mercy and truth shall go before thy face," Psalms 89:14. And now a third verse has been added, "Blessed are the peacemakers," Matthew 5:9. FFRF legal fellow Joseph McDonald wrote to the Henderson County Mayor Eddie Bray saying that these verses are an unconstitutional endorsement of religion and must be removed. In Iowa, we're charging that the governor of Iowa has violated the Constitution by raising funds for a Christian school. Last Saturday, Governor Kim Reynolds helped a faith-based school, allowing it to auction off a dinner with her to governor's mansion.
At the governor's mansion, right?
At the governor's mansion. The winning bid of more than $30,000 went to a Christian school whose mission is to nurture passionate apprentices of Christ. So we're requesting that the governor will never again use her secular position or any government resources to financially support or endorse groups with religious missions.
And speaking of overly religious governors, I wrote a blog last Friday called Religious Governors Are a Danger to Our Health. And briefly, I point out that 9 in 10 atheists would say that we will definitely or probably get a vaccine, compared to only 56% of Republicans and GOP-leaning, 54% of white evangelical Protestants. Most of them are Republican. And it's been well documented that the people who are opposing mask wearing are white evangelicals, and if they happen to be in public office, they're white evangelical governors. And we are in the middle of an epidemic, a pandemic, very heightened right now, and yet 21 states have no statewide face covering mandates, and 10 states recently lifted those mandates. And I do is show the 16 governors who have refused to do mask mandates or have lifted them, and what their Christian nationalist or religious orientation is. And guess what? They're all Christian. They're all white. They're all Republican. And many of them, instead of taking action, have issued proclamations of prayer. And as we know, nothing feels like prayer.
So you have, I think, 21 governors on there.
Yeah, maybe 21.
Regardless of their position on the pandemic, they have been overtly really using their office to proselytize. Texas is one of those cases.
And Texas Governor Greg Abbott is one of those governors who proclaimed churches to be essential services a year ago, making an exception for church services in his stay-at-home order. I didn't actually go into all the stay-at-home orders. I mostly looked at the masking and looked at their prayer proclamations. But another good example is Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, who told mayors last year to pray about the virus, not to pass mandates. He passed an executive order blocking local governments from regulating places of worship to stop the spread of the virus, and announced in January he was going to send out prayers 3 times a week for the next 4 weeks about COVID. And as we say at our office, nothing feels like prayer. But Dan, I guess these public officials are truly blinded by religion to the facts, evidence, science, and actually compassion. So we really do have our work cut out for us in combating so many public officials whose true allegiance lies with the religious lobbies, with churches and their own particular dogmas, instead of their oath of office to promote the public welfare of we the people. That's in the preamble of the U.S. Constitution. And speaking of problems, privileging of churches in orders, we got a very bad decision by the Supreme Court last week. It came down almost at midnight last Friday as if it was an emergency. And this is perfectly ridiculous. It was a high court ruling interfering with California's COVID-19 distancing. And it's the fifth time the Supreme Court has interfered in this COVID order in California to side with churches who say that they are being discriminated against. And this is science denying religious litigants. And this case was about a pastor who wanted to have in-home services. And right now, until recently, California restricted that to 3 different households meeting privately in a household. This applied across the board, whether to religion or non-religion, and they said that discriminated. And unbelievably, a majority of the Supreme Court agreed with them.
So an emergency should be to stop a harm, and here the emergency is that they want to allow them to continue causing harm.
And the dissenting decision was written by Justice Kagan, and she pointed out this is a blanket restriction on at-home gatherings of all kinds, religious and secular alike. They're treating everybody the same. And these are called shadow dockets, where the Supreme Court is coming down with these decisions in the middle of the night. There's no public discussion. There's no argument. There's no guidance on lower court judges on how to analyze these cases, and they're creating a lot of very dangerous precedent. especially in a pandemic. So watch out. And then, speaking of courts, we do have this danger with abortion right now in the courts. We've seen a lot of pushback by Trump, but now we have the Biden administration, and we have some good news, which is that they are announcing that women in the 17 or so states that allow Medicaid abortion, medical abortions to take place, can get them through the mail. They can do telehealth. They can talk to their doctors remotely, and they don't have to go in person to get a pill that they don't even take at that office. And that's repealing a Trump rule. And we also see the Biden administration this week promulgating a policy that will be pro-Planned Parenthood, and that is involving the cutoff of Planned Parenthood from Title X money for low-income women because Planned Parenthood refers on abortion, or they may have clinics that are performing abortions, and the Trump administration cut them off. And this has resulted in over 180,000 unintended pregnancies. So we're glad to see these changes.
And because most of the opposition, the primary opposition to abortion, is religiously motivated.
Yes, and I should correct myself. There's 33 states that do allow physicians to provide abortion pills. It's ridiculous that they don't all, but this will have a big impact in those states. And finally, I did another blog about the very chilling scapegoating of LGBTQ people. And we have talked about the hordes of trans, anti-trans bills that are at the state level that supposedly protect girl athletes from all of these boys masquerading as girls who want to win their trophies, you know, this is against trans athletes from being in sports. But there are other developments in the United States. And for example, last week we reported that the Arkansas Governor Hutchinson had had enough of this anti-trans stuff and even vetoed a bill that would ban medical treatment of trans minors, even that was ongoing. He was overridden. And we are seeing, you know, trans youth as the great new bugaboo. You know, it's a culture war. It's to deflect attention away from important things that the conservatives are supporting and to try to single them out and scapegoat them.
And I think maybe it's because they know they've lost the gay marriage fight, right?
Two
so
out
they
of
have
three,
to find another soapbox issue to get.
Well, and they're not forgiving it. Two out of three Americans support marriage equality, and we had the Supreme Court vote in 2015. But now the conservatives in Congress are stalling the Equality Act that would add LGBTQ as a protected class under the Civil Rights Act. So we're seeing a lot of pushback. And I point out that a cautionary tale, again, is the country of Poland, which actually has 100 communities that have created LGBTQ-free zones. The European Union is condemning it, but it's very frightening to see this happen, and we are awaiting a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court where we could see legalized discrimination against LGBTQ in foster care. So we're going backwards a little bit in the United States, and we need to fight back.
So we're going to take a break. Here's a little bit of Charlie Chaplin. It's his birthday tomorrow. This music is called Dancing on the Yacht. We need some happy music, don't we, from time to time. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to talk with the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Director of Strategic Response, Andrew Seidel, about the bill introduced in Congress today to expand the U.S. Supreme Court.
Very exciting. And after that, we'll talk with Mexican-American actor, author, and atheist Indra Zuno about her life and her new book, a fiction book called Freedom Dues.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us, also living in Madison but remotely working, is Andrew Seidel, FFRF's Director of Strategic Response and an attorney. And as promised, we are going to talk with Andrew about the big news of the week, the big news of today, which is the introduction of a bill in Congress to increase the number of justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. Pretty exciting news, Andrew. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, especially for something like this. It's very, very exciting, you know, especially if you're a nerd like I am for the law. Good day.
So there's going to be people who are going to go, what? You want to increase the number of people on the Supreme Court? Isn't that number assigned in the U.S. Constitution? What do you say
to
that?
It's not. Yeah, it's not. The number of justices on the Supreme Court is set by Congress. It started at 6. It has been formally changed under the law 7 different times. We could actually say 8 times if you want to include the full year that the Senate held open a seat after Justice Scalia died and then refused to confirm Merrick Garland. And they actually promised to hold that seat open indefinitely if Clinton had won. So it's changed a number of times, and it's usually, historically, it's been tied to the number of circuits that we have had, and we currently have essentially 13 circuit courts. So let's have 13 justices. That's what the Judiciary Act of 2021 sets out to do.
So Representative Mondaire Jones of New York has introduced this bill, correct? And who else are the co-sponsors? Who are some of the co-sponsors?
So Jerry Nadler is on there, and Ed Markey are both on there as well. And it really is. This is just a crucial bill. Because however bad people listening think the situation at the Supreme Court is, it is worse, much worse than people realize, I think. We need to rebalance and expand the court that has already been politicized and captured by partisan and special interests. You know, once upon a time, the Supreme Court may have been an apolitical body or more or less political, I guess we should say, but that is just not true anymore. This is a essentially a corrupted and hijacked court with a serious legitimacy problem.
Well, and as you know, Andrew, my real grudge here is that we had shenanigans, unprecedented manipulation about the filling of the court due to what happened to Obama's appointment, his wanting to nominate Merrick Garland, and that being entirely thwarted under phony pretext by Mitch McConnell, and then playing an end run game here with Amy Coney Barrett saying, oh, you can't fill a seat in the election year. And then they did it in about 36 days after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died last fall, in the middle of an election. And so I always feel, that you can't correct that. There's no way to correct that unless you can expand the court.
So, Andrew,
for
our listeners, what's the state church implications here?
I mean, they're massive. I mean, the way the court is set up right now, it has already weaponized religious freedom. We just saw it pass another shadow docket decision on Friday night, essentially weaponizing religious freedom and allowing anybody who has any religious claim under the law to be exempt from neutral and generally applicable laws, including those that are meant to stop the spread of a lethal pandemic. And in other words, to your point, right, that the hesitancy that people have towards tinkering with the size of the court made sense when it was a less political body. But it has been captured by political interests. That's the point that I think you're trying to get at when you point out that Gorsuch sits in a stolen seat and Amy Coney Barrett sits in a captured seat after, millions of Americans have been voted in this election. So the court has already been packed. This is not a fair court. This is not an impartial court. So the idea that, expanding this court and correcting this imbalance is somehow court packing is nonsense, because that is where we are right now. And then this
unpacking
is all about fixing.
So we only have about 2 minutes left, Andrew. Tell us who else, besides the Freedom From Religion Foundation, is supporting this bill?
I mean, so if you go look at Jerry Nadler's press release, it quotes you, Annie Laurie, Nan Aaron, the president of Alliance for Justice, Free Speech for the People, the Center for Popular Democracy Action, Public Citizen, Take Back the Court, Demos, Demand Justice. I mean, there's a lot of really, really great groups out there that support this bill. And we ask all of our members to contact their representatives and senators and support this bill as well. It's hugely important.
And we'll be sending out action alerts to everybody who is a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation soon. And I think that you're pointing out that the court has already been packed is very significant because yep. I think even many thoughtful, progressive people will worry, oh, is this like what FDR tried to do?
And it's not at all. And, I mean, a great example of this is people probably heard about the creationism bill that was passed by the Arkansas House earlier this week. That was put forward by Representative Mary Bentley, and it passed overwhelmingly in the House. Now, one reason for the bill is this anti-trans bigotry that is rooted in biblical creationism, and I wrote about that for Religion Dispatches. But the second reason, Bentley stated this very clearly. She wants to get creationism in the public schools, which is clearly unconstitutional, right? Like, the Supreme Court has weighed in on this in 1987, in the 1960s. Many federal district courts have weighed. There's no way this stands up. But Bentley is confident in proposing this clearly unconstitutional bill because, as she said on the floor, I believe we have a different Supreme Court, and I think we have different members of the Supreme Court.
And,
so
Andrew, we know this. We know this is also happening,
yeah,
and the anti-abortionists, of course, are diligently trying to get things up to the Supreme Court. So on so many different levels, they want to undo everything good that the Supreme Court has ever done. Well, thank you so much for your activism on this and for joining us, Andrew, today.
My pleasure.
Andrew Seidel is the Director of Strategic Response and Constitutional Attorney for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So we're going to take a break. There's a little bit of some cheerful, maybe optimistic Charlie Chaplin music because it's his birthday this week. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. After the break, we're going to talk with the Mexican-American actor and author, Indra Zuno, who has a fascinating story to tell.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents, co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're very happy today to finally have Indra Zuno on our show today. We've known about her for many years. She's a multifaceted person. Indra is a Mexican actor who's maybe best known for her characters in the telenovelas, which are like daytime TV, Mi Querida Isabel and Camila. She now lives in California, where her day job is as a court interpreter, but her true love is writing. She received the UCLA Claire Carmichael Scholarship in Novel Writing and was nominated for the James Kirkwood Prize and the Allegra Johnson Writing Prize. Indra is an atheist. She hosts the Facebook page La Morena Escéptica, which means the dark-haired skeptic.
And we first saw Indra when she spoke at the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. in 2016. Her debut novel, released last year, is called Freedom Dues, Dues as in D-U-E-S. It's a sweeping historical novel about white indentured servitude in early 18th century colonial America. And we have Indra Zuno on the phone from Southern California. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, guys. I am so excited to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Well, this is really exciting. I read your book. As you know, I just finished it yesterday. And what an adventure your book is. And I guess it took you many years to write it. And we want to talk about this book in a few minutes. But first, you have your own adventure story. You were born in Mexico, and you come from something of like a royal family in Mexico. Was your grandfather the governor of the state of Jalisco?
Yes, my grandfather was the governor of the state of Jalisco, and he was the founder of the University of Guadalajara. He was already quite elderly when I was born, so unfortunately I never really had a chance to get to know him and to talk to him, but apparently he was quite the intellectual, and he was an atheist.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and I remember Guadalajara. It seemed to me to be an intellectual kind of city. The hospital there was high when I got bit by a dog, but that's about all I remember. But he must have instilled some kind of intellectual values into his family then.
Well, you know, yes, a lot of my aunts and uncles, it's my understanding, they remained atheists. But not all of them. And I have noticed, unfortunately, that I think most of the generations that followed are actually, they became Catholic. I guess they just couldn't help the really, really heavy influence of Guadalajara, which is super duper Catholic.
Wow. So also by marriage, I guess it's by marriage, is it your uncle who was the president of Mexico?
Yes, Luis Echeverria Alvarez was married to one of my dad's sisters, Maria Esther Zuno de Echeverria. There was that.
So whatever his legacy was, it wasn't the Zuno legacy, was it? Because he did some good things, but he was also quite controversial in his presidency.
Yes, I am not really too familiar with, his work before and after he became president, but I believe that unfortunately he was involved with the student massacre of Tlatelolco in 1968, which is a really horrible dark stain in Mexico's history.
I was there that year too. I remember that.
And he's still alive.
Well, I was in Mexico that year. I wasn't part of that, but I was in Mexico that year. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Damn, that's super fascinating. Well, you know, I was born in 1970, so, I know about it.
So your uncle is still alive, right? He's 99?
Yes, he's still alive, amazingly.
So, Indra, were you raised with religion, or did you have that atheist heritage?
I was not raised religious whatsoever. My mom was raised in a very, very Catholic household, but she was never dogmatic. She was very skeptical always, fortunately, and my father was an atheist. So in my household, I never heard about God or baby Jesus. I do remember we celebrated Christmas, but I didn't know that it was about, a baby Jesus that had been born. And we would set up a Christmas tree, and we would set up un nacimiento, nativity
the crush,
scene. But for me, it was like playing with dolls. You know, it was just fun. Oh, we're buying the little, figuring of the donkey and the cow and the what have you. And, of course, there were presents. But there was never any mention of God. And it wasn't until my parents divorced around 1977 or 78 that when I was living with my mom, I started getting more of a Catholic education only because my mom's parents started pressuring her, saying that, she was being an irresponsible mother, not teaching it, me and my sister. There were two of us, but my sister died in 1985 of leukemia when she was 13. So it was because of my grandparents' pressure that we ended up actually, we were baptized when I was 9 or 10. Otherwise, I think my mom would, you know, she wouldn't have even done that.
Well, you were baptized, so that means you're covered. So then you went on to become a well-known actor. Let's listen to a clip of one of the scenes you played where somebody's accusing you of telling a lie.
¿Por qué me mentiste?
¿Qué?
¿Por qué me dijiste que Matilde se puso como loca cuando vio que Camilo te estaba abrazando?
Porque sí es cierto, estaba como histérica.
Pero no dijiste toda la verdad. ¿A alguien le mentiste?
¿Ay, a quién, Rafael?
So there you are being accused of being a liar. And then,
and
it must be kind of fun to play those roles.
Well, then you also played, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
You also played, I think, what amounts to a seduction scene in this clip there, where you say, tómame.
Oh, my.
Me arreglé para ti. Tómame, Miguel.
It says, take me, Miguel. I am yours. So,
how about that dramatic music?
I know that. Well, you were great in acting. Here's one where you, I'm not quite sure what this is about, but you were being accused of being inegalitarian.
Darle mis tierras a esa gentuza?
¿Por qué les llamas así?
Porque esos son.
Son seres humanos igual que tú y que yo.
¿Pero cómo se te ocurre? Esos no son iguales a nosotros.
That sounds like daytime TV.
I think this one is the most fun. You're playing a nun, I guess. Let's listen to that and you can tell us about that.
Isidro, trajeron a una muchacha. Es una trabajadora de las fábricas. Dicen que la atacaron.
No sabes si es Lisbeth.
No sé.
Yeah, I watched some of that. It's pretty dramatic. So you were playing a nun, and was that a Catholic hospital?
Yes, it was. And I actually only had, I think, three very short scenes in total in that movie. It was an independent, low-budget film, which is how I got my SAG card. Huh. And the lead actress was Minnie Driver. And
really?
I'm sure that she was, you know, there were several celebrities in that film. And I think that they were clearly doing a favor for like a friend producer or a friend director or something. The actor who played the Bruce in Braveheart was also there. I don't remember the name of this other performer, but he was in La Bamba. He was the brother of the lead.
Ah.
Let's see. I think those were like the most famous people in that cast.
Besides you, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really, when you come to L.A., whatever fame you may have had in other countries, it doesn't matter. And I also learned that it doesn't matter if you're well known in Broadway. If you're established in Broadway, you come to L.A. and it's practically like starting from scratch.
Wow. Well, and you did speak some English in that movie. I see that. So before we take a break to talk about your book, you've become something of a skeptic activist. You have a Facebook page now called La Morena Escéptica. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Yes, that is very, very recent. You know, for years I've been getting all kinds of urban myths. Even before Facebook, I would get these emails with these urban myths like, you know, be careful about this plant because it's poisonous and it'll kill all your family. And I look it up and it's just a translation into Spanish from some debunked thing that I found on Snopes. I've been promoting Snopes for years and years and years. And I am in a WhatsApp chat group with my high school classmates from Guadalajara, and they very often share urban myths and misinformation. And so, you know, I just thought, you know, I don't think there's really any YouTuber in Spanish like there are, like we have in English. And so I've been thinking, I ought to do something. And I finally, the shoe dropped, because a few weeks ago, this WhatsApp group, you know, somebody asked, hey, Do you know if chlorine dioxide is really good to cure COVID? And I'd never heard of it. But I didn't even know what it was. So I looked it up, and oh my God, it was this whole can of worms that opened up. Somebody founded a church, and their sacrament is chlorine dioxide. And this was way back in the 1990s. And so now you've got people all over the world joining this church and claiming that chlorine dioxide cures autism and cancer and whatever. And so now it's COVID. And is what really made me go, okay, we're going to start now. We're going to do this. So, but it's just really, it's just at the beginning.
So we're going to take a break here, Indra. And if people are if you can read Spanish, they can go to Facebook and look for La Morena Escéptica and jump in and maybe help you with some of
your... Yeah, well, it's great that you're fighting disinformation and superstition on this. And when we come back, Indra, we want to talk about your new book, your novel, called Freedom Dues, and it talks about white indentured servitude in the 1700s in colonial America. Also, the Delaware tribe.
Delaware Indians,
that Dan belongs to, figures in this, so that's fun. So we're going to come back and talk about your novel.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are talking with Indra Zuno, who is an actress and a novelist and an atheist. And her novel is called Freedom Dues, D-U-E-S. And it's a fascinating research project that you did, Indra, about indentured slaves or indentured servants in the 1700s in colonial United States who were largely, Scottish? And you did an incredible amount of research. So tell us more about what this book is about, why you wrote it, and maybe we'd like to talk about the Delaware Indians as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. About 9 years ago, I was listening to NPR, and they talked about the book, White Cargo, The Forgotten History of Britain's White Slaves in America. And it was Toni Morrison who was talking about it. I went and bought the book. I read it, and I found it just fascinating. So these were indentured servants. They were Scottish, Irish, English, and not just Irish, native Irish, but also from Northern Ireland. And I just thought it was fascinating, and one day I decided that I would write a historical novel about it. And while I was doing all my research, I had to learn what Pennsylvania and Philadelphia specifically were like in 1729, which is when my book begins, and this is how I found that the Delawares, were a very prominent tribe still there at the time, before they kept getting pushed farther and farther, northwest. So that's how I came to know the Delawares.
And that's my tribe, so I'm a
that
member of
that.
That
is your tribe, Dan. That is so exciting.
I know. Yeah, I know. We ended up in Oklahoma, actually, after 7 migrations. But and you contacted me to ask a little bit about that. It was really fun to read your book. And to actually be in their villages, to feel like I was in their lodging, I mean, that comes toward the end of the book, of course. But the whole premise of the adventure is so exciting. And there's one line in your book that jumped out at me when this planter was coming to the docks in Maryland to get on this ship of British criminals, including this 10-year-old girl named Allie. He was embarrassed that he had to resort, he had to stoop to buying these criminals because he couldn't afford to actually buy a black slave, which was like, owning a black slave was like a prestige, and here he was digging at the bottom of the barrel from this little 10-year-old girl named Mally. I mean, you did a lot of research. Didn't you travel on the boat?
Well, you know, I couldn't find any information on what an 18th century tall ship would look like on the inside. And years before, I had traveled to Boston, and I had been on a replica of the Mayflower. And I thought, well, if somebody decided to make a seaworthy replica of the Mayflower, there's probably a replica of an 18th century ship somewhere. And I just did like this crazy Google search, and up came the Lady Washington, which is exactly that. And it's kind of like an educational program. This ship is docked usually in the state of Washington. And, you know, when there isn't a pandemic, every year they travel down the coast and go all the way, sometimes even down to Long Beach. And they have a program called 2 weeks Before the Mass, and anybody can join them and just live on the ship for 2 weeks. And that's what I did.
Wow.
When you live on the ship, you have to do chores. Is that right?
Yes. Every day they assign chores, and it could be, you know, either cleaning the kitchen, which they call the galley, which is so tough, or wash the decks or polish everything that's made of brass or take out the trash. You know, every day everyone has chores.
Wow, and your research paid off, because I really felt like whatever the scene was, I felt like it was there. You know, the forest, and then the London streets, and then the Northern Ireland, all of that stuff that you had to learn to put this sweeping narrative together.
Yeah, well, you know, on my website, indrazuno.com, I have you can find the list of all the books that I read classified by subject, in case somebody wants to, you know, read further on a research subject. I actually haven't, you know, made a list of every single book that I read. I keep telling myself every week, I'm going to do that.
Well, I understand that you did read over 100 books on white servitude, the Delaware tribe, the Scots-Irish immigration, and also reviewed a lot of court records, correct, about history in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. So you did an enormous amount of research.
Yes, which I didn't know I was going to have to do at the beginning. I first thought, well, you know, I already read White Cargo. I'm going to read it again, and then I'll buy a second book on indentured servitude, and then, you know, that'll be that. I'll be ready to go. And I had no idea, because you need to learn, what religion are they? How do they dress? What do they eat? Where do they work? How do they travel? How long does it take to travel 10 miles on a horse?
A long time.
It never ends. With every chapter, I thought, okay, I'm done. I don't need to do any research anymore. And it doesn't end until you're finished.
And what kind of dialect did they speak? And what kind of jobs did they do? You know, fixing shoes or build. I mean, all the background that you had to know. There's a very brief encounter with a young printer named Benjamin in Philadelphia, whose last name was Franklin, which I thought was fascinating. Very amazing.
So we only have about a minute left. Indra, could you just briefly synthesize the plot?
It's two young people from Europe who end up as indentured servants in the American colonies in Pennsylvania and Maryland. And at one point, they meet in Philadelphia, and they run away, and together they fight every obstacle until they earn their freedom.
Hmm.
So I had an indentured servitude relative who came over on the Mayflower, who was George Soule, and he was a teacher. But we were told he was an indentured servant, so I assume he had to earn his freedom.
Well, he wasn't one of the religious.
Yeah. He wasn't a pilgrim.
Yeah. No. They would buy teachers. There were wealthy people who would buy teachers for their children.
Huh. So there you go.
Yeah. So, well, I'm looking forward to reading it. I haven't read it yet, but it'll be my turn. And so how can people find Freedom Dues, the novel by you, Indra Zuno?
She has a webpage.
I have the webpage, IndraZuno.com, and if you go to buy book, you will find options. You can buy it from a third party like, Barnes & Noble or whatever. But if you want a signed copy, then you can certainly order it from me.
Well, that's what I got.
And we want to remind people about your Facebook page that's debunking superstition and urban myths and pseudoscience. What is that called?
La Morena Escéptica. It's in Spanish.
And I'll spell your webpage just in case people can't understand it. Indra Zuno is IndraZuno.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Indra. We could talk for hours about all of this, but it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I really can't believe how quickly this flew by. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Annie Laurie.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
So buy the book. It's called Freedom Dues, a novel. And Buzz, thanks again for producing and engineering the show. And thank you, all of you listeners who are listening to the broadcast in Philadelphia on WOOMLP, in Madison, Wisconsin to WID and WMUU, Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, Bryan, Texas, KEOS, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, and Black Sheep Radio, WOOL in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and New Hampshire.
And WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins.
Oh, I missed that one, yes. And give us a thumbs up if you're listening to our show on a podcast.
And ask for more information at FFRF.org or just join us. We would love to have your support for everything that the Freedom From Religion Foundation does beyond our media and radio show. You can support our important litigation and work to keep religion out of government. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday